This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector. And if you're walking the exhibit hangars at Whitman Regional Airport this week, I want you to stop and look at something that most people scroll right past on their way to the Warbirds. The avionics booths. Rows of glass panels glowing in the dark of Hangar B and Hangar C. Synthetic vision painting the terrain ahead. Digital autopilots. Angle of attack indicators the size of a matchbook. And here's the thing most people miss. Nearly every one of those technologies flew first in an experimental airplane, a home-built. Something a person riveted together in a garage. And the reason why is one of the most quietly important stories in all of aviation. Let's break this down. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last, AviationSoul.com. So here's the situation. In American aviation, there are two worlds. On one side, you have certified aircraft, your Cessna 172, your Piper Cherokee, your Cirrus. Every part on those airplanes, and I mean every part, has to earn a piece of paper from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. If you want to put a new attitude indicator in a certified panel, that instrument needs what's called a Technical Standard Order Authorization, a TSO, proving it meets a federal design standard. And then the installation itself needs approval, a Supplemental Type Certificate, an STC, or a field approval. That process is thorough. It is also slow and it is expensive. We're talking years and millions of dollars to certify a single instrument. Now here's the other world, the experimental amateur-built category. If you build the majority of your own aircraft for education and recreation, the FAA issues it an experimental airworthiness certificate. And in that category, you're not bound by the TSO requirement for your instruments. You, the builder, are the manufacturer. You can install a panel that never saw a certification lab. Here's what most people miss. That exemption isn't a loophole. It's a deliberate policy decision. The FAA drew a line and said, in this corner of aviation, we will let people innovate and accept more of the risk themselves. And that single decision turned the experimental fleet into the research and development lab for the entire industry. The data tells an interesting story. Think about where the glass cockpit actually came from for small airplanes, not the airlines. The airlines had glass in the 1980s, sure, but those were $100,000 cathode ray tube systems. The revolution for the little airplanes, the affordable full-color primary flight display, that came up through the experimental world in the late 1990s and early 2000s. A company shows up at Oshkosh with a screen. That screen replaces your six steam gauges, your attitude indicator, your airspeed, your altimeter, your heading, all of it, rendered in pixels off a set of solid-state sensors. No spinning gyro, no vacuum pump. And the home builders bought it and flew it and beat on it in the real world across thousands of hours. And that field data, that's the part the labs can't replicate. You cannot buy 10,000 hours of real-world reliability data. You have to fly it. So let me give you the honest picture. What are the pros here and what are the cons? The upside is obvious and enormous. The experimental exemption gave us rapid iteration. A company can push a software update to a flight display over a winter and have it flying by spring. In the certified world, that same change might trigger a recertification effort measured in years. That speed is why the innovation ramp at AirVenture is where the future actually shows up first. Synthetic vision, where the screen draws the mountains and runways for you, showed up on experimental panels years before it was affordable in a certified cockpit. Angle of attack indicators, the little gauge that shows how close the wing is to a stall, cheap and common in the experimental world, long before the FAA streamlined a path to put them in certified airplanes. But I promised you balance. So, here's the honest downside. When you remove the certification requirement, you also remove the safety net that certification provides. Certification is expensive because it forces environmental testing. Vibration, temperature extremes, electromagnetic interference, it forces failure analysis. What happens when this component dies, and does the pilot get a clear warning? In the experimental world, the quality ranges from spectacular to concerning. The best experimental avionics houses do their own rigorous testing because their reputation depends on it. But there's no floor, there's no federal minimum, and the accident record has chapters written by builders who wired a panel wrong, or trusted a single point of failure, or flew behind a display that didn't degrade gracefully when a sensor lied to it. That risk is real, and it's the price of admission to that category. Here's the part that makes this an actual revolution instead of just a niche. The technology didn't stay in the experimental world. Watch the pattern. a capability proves itself across the home-built fleet. Thousands of hours accumulate, the reliability data piles up, and then and only then does it become economical to bring it into the certified world, because the design is now mature and the field experience de-risks the certification. The FAA even built formal bridges for this. There's a whole approval pathway that let non-TSO designs, proven in the experimental world, come into certified aircraft as long as the aircraft owner and a mechanic accept them under specific conditions. Autopilots that started life on home builds got certified for the legacy fleet. Digital displays that were experimental only found approved paths into type-certificated airplanes that were designed when Eisenhower was president. So the glass panel in a modern certified Cessna, the affordable digital autopilot in a 50-year-old Bonanza, trace the lineage back and it runs straight through the kit hangars at shows exactly like the one happening this week. That's why AirVenture matters as more than a fly-in. It is aviation's product launch pad. When a company wants to introduce a genuinely new avionics capability, they don't take out a magazine ad, they bring it to Oshkosh, they put it in a booth in Hangar B, and they let 250,000 of the most demanding customers in the world put their hands on it. The experimental category is the proving ground, and this week is the trade show floor where the proving gets announced. Here's the honest timeline going forward. The next wave is already sitting in those booths. Autopilots that do envelope protection, quietly pushing back on the controls before you get yourself into trouble. Sensor fusion pulling together data from a half dozen sources into one honest picture of the airplane's state, even early machine-driven traffic and terrain advisories. All of it is going to walk the same road. Prove it in experimental, gather the field data, then cross the bridge into the certified fleet. That path is measured in years, not months, and anyone who tells you a brand new capability will be in every certified panel by next season is selling you something. But the direction is not in doubt. The garage is still where it starts. My thanks to the Experimental Aircraft Association and the FAA's own advisory material on experimental and non-TSO'd equipment for the regulatory backbone of this one. If you want more on the tech behind the panel, we keep the archive at radiohangar.com. Next time you're in those exhibit hangars, give the avionics rows an extra minute. You're not looking at gadgets, you're looking at the certified cockpit of 10 years from now. I'm Vector. Keep the shiny side up.